There were many moments of dark madness during South Africa's isolation from the rest of the cricket-playing world, or at least the official cricket-playing world, but perhaps the nadir came when the well-meaning but stoically naive Mike Gatting was asked whether he'd seen the seriousness with which the protesters were toying outside the team hotel in Kimberley in 1989. "Oh," replied the one-time captain of England and then leader of the last team of rebels to tour South Africa, "I saw some people dancing, yes." Ali Bacha had always insisted that it was vital to the survival of cricket in South Africa that generations of players still had a form of international cricket to aspire to, even if it patently wasn't the real thing. And like many long-serving leaders and men of vision, he stuck steadfastly to those beliefs, even when the trickle of brave early critics had turned into a tidal wave of dissent. West Indians came and were ostracised to such an extent by their countrymen that in many cases they were unable to return home. Englishmen came unapologetically for the money and offered lukewarm, unconvincing performances in exchange. Australians came and in some cases stayed behind, having discovered a land similar to their own, at least physically, and the lifestyle it offered to the white and privileged. Even a team of Sri Lankans came and were so poor on the field that our memories have filtered their deeds into our subconscious, leaving just images of small, cheerful men with unpronounceable names. It was the only time in Graham Pollock's life when even he must have questioned the fairness of the contest between the batsman and the bowler. It was utterly conceivable that the top half dozen school first 11s in South Africa would have beaten them. But as always with South African sports fans, there will be many happy memories, and not just amongst the white community. The Currie Cup was the strongest domestic competition in the world, not even worth debating. And the annual New Year's fixture between Transvaal and Western Province at Newlands carried as much of the tension and intensity of a test match. Peter Kirsten, Garth LaRue, Vince van der Bijl, Mike Proctor, Jimmy Cook. There was a long, long list of very, very big names to be gracing the Currie Cup during that period, and they only came from 10% of the population. When the unity of the white and black cricket boards was concluded in 1991, it was understandably fraught with suspicion. Never mind the agendas of the administrators, even the deeds of the players on the field were largely disregarded, or at best significantly downplayed by both sides, because the playing fields were so uneven. Literally. There were honourable exceptions, Johnny Waite and Eddie Barlow spring to mind, but the vast majority of white cricketers had little or no idea of conditions that non-white players had to endure to pursue the game they loved. Never mind the overnight journeys in rusty combis they made to play interprovincial fixtures, it was the state of the pitches in the outfields that made their contests every bit as much of a test of courage and mental strength as those of their privileged white contemporaries. When historians and students of non-white cricket, not to mention those who played under the banner of the SACB, say that Lefty Adams or Kaya Majola were as good as any of their white counterparts, or that Vincent Barnes would have been as effective a Currie Cup player as Stephen Jeffries, white people still struggle to believe it. They base their judgment on a reasonable summation of one side of the story and are satisfied with that. Whereas Vincent Barnes might have found his wickets a little harder to come by on the flatter surfaces of Newlands, his astonishing record of 323 wickets at an average of 11.95 in 68 first-class matches is surely impressive enough to persuade the most ardent sceptic of the talent competing in the Howard Bowl. Oh, and Basil D'Oliveira did pretty well for England, you may recall. That may all be behind us now, but it should not be forgotten. Fortunately, there have been a number of very fine books produced in the last 20 years that serve as reminders of the talent that existed outside the official game but was squandered by apartheid South Africa. This book, however, is a celebration of the first 20 years of official South African cricket that includes the whole country.